Morning, everybody. I hope you can hear me. I'm Andrew Flowerdew. I've been working with Stoke-on-Trent right from the start of the process, and Nick Jepson, who's the bid director for RM. And what we're going to try and do is take you through, it's entitled The Long and Winding Road. We're going to try and take you through the process that we went through, which is slightly changed now with the new rules about procurement, but it'll give you a flavour of the process, because it's long, it's winding, and it can be very hard. So a little bit about Stoke. We've got 24 schools in BSF, and 17 of the high schools, 5 specials and some unapproved. 21 million for ICT. Now, it's a non-LEP, and the reason it's a non-LEP was because we've already got a whole estate PFI for facilities management across all our high schools and primary schools. So it would be a bit difficult to disentangle that. So we went for an ICT procurement and a design and build procurement, and that's why it's a non-LEP. So the key thing, we spent a lot of time before we even went out and put an ODU together, was building the vision and building an understanding of how the ICT, the buildings, would all link together in terms of the way, the needs for Stoke-on-Trent and the things that our pupils needed to help them learn. So a number of workshops with head teachers in a nice, pleasant place with good meal and some nice drinks, really sort of taking, for instance, special needs, taking the idea of sports, taking the idea of how ICT can support it all, and chewing the fat and thinking about how that linked into the needs of the pupils. We had conferences, very big conferences, where we invited student representatives, governors, teachers, senior leaders from schools together to come together and talk about where learning was going to go in the next 10 and 15 years. And they were very successful, particularly with the students there. And several of the conferences, we actually asked students to interview the speakers. And one guy called Chris Yap, who had just been speaking at the G8 conference for Microsoft, said actually the students gave him a bigger grilling than the world leaders did. So it was well worth doing that. And then we had various iterations of the strategic business case, which we sent out to people and said, what do you think? What are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? We did a lot of work about that before we went out to the market. From the start, innovation was our key driver, and it was the one thing that the school said they wanted more of, and they didn't want to be stifled. So we wanted to make sure that learning was delivered to as many learners as possible, so that the learners that we knew we were failing, and currently Stoke is around 48% 5A stars to C, we wanted to make sure that we engaged them in the learning process more. We wanted BSF to build on the things that we were already doing, and we were doing some quite innovative stuff. And the head teachers at the start were really, I think, wary that a managed service would come in and stifle innovation. So when we were talking to the bidders, almost every session, the words innovation, innovation, innovation were brought up. And the key to it, we thought, was the learning platform and the VLE. We wanted to make sure that that was right, because we saw the possibility for an early implementation. We were already seeing great learning gains from using things like assessment for learning and e-portfolios, and we wanted to roll that out particularly to our hard to reach learners, and particularly in an area based context, because we were doing all of our secondary schools. We knew that actually using an effective learning platform and making that work for us would mean that our buildings and our learning would happen better across the city rather in little islands. So the bidding process, dear, this is a wonderful one. It's still going on. We published our ODU, and it says make sure everyone internally understands the process. So we actually published our ODU 3 times. The first time it got published under the wrong heading. The second time it got published with the wrong settings on it, and it actually took me and the bid director to go down and sit over the internal people and say, right, this is what you need to do. So just make sure everybody's clear. We had 28 responses to the PQQ. Some of them, I suspect, were not very serious. Some people had just cut and paste stuff, and you could see that the words X City were still left in. And we sifted through to about 10 really serious responders. And then during the next process, we had not only a documentary analysis, and we did that with both with teachers, local authority advisors, and external consultants. So we got a broad view of respondents, but also we invited bidders to come and talk about their view of how they were going to approach Stoke to a wider audience, including head teachers. And that was really important, I think. And then we got to the ITN, which is now called the Invitation to Continue a Dialogue, where you get down to three bidders. And that's where all the hard work really started. So this is where you get into the detailed discussions with the three bidders. And this is where you get to find out that the sentences you used in your document, which you thought were really clear, and that everybody in the city thought they were really clear, weren't at all. So bidders would come and ask you about things. We split ours up into a technical panel, which was to do with the education and the technology working together, and legal and financial discussions. And the first phase is about the bidders coming in and getting a feel for what Stoke wanted. And that was really useful. Although I think probably if I was doing it again, I'd try and structure it a little better. It was a bit meandering. We used two example schools. We used a new build and a refurb as a chance for the bidders to go and talk to the schools, get a feel for them, and then come back and present a sort of half-done solution so that the bidders could understand whether they were on the right way or not and whether they were getting the feel for Stoke. And that was really useful, although you have to make it clear to the sample schools that they're not going to get the finished product at that final meeting. They were, I think, a little disappointed that they weren't getting their whiz-bang stuff given to them. And then it's trying to provide as much detail as possible so the bids can be good as possible. And that was the other thing that we really didn't get a handle on at Stoke, although we did okay. We didn't predict enough about what the bidders would want from us. And so there was quite a lot of time waiting for us to work with the internal groups to get them to give us the information that the bidders wanted. And I think that's, you know, try and get as much information as possible early on. It'll make the bidding process easier. Then we went through the evaluation of bids, and that was quite interesting. We had an evaluation panel that we'd started off right the way through, and it was made up of teachers from schools, local authority representatives, and corporate people, as well as a couple of consultants. We had a technical evaluation panel which fed questions back to the bidders and asked them what they meant by something, and are they really saying that they're going to have that? The financial panel, which was really didn't kick in till the end, really, and maybe we should have done it a bit earlier, where we looked at each bid. The other thing that we didn't get right was we didn't tell the bidders how we wanted the information in the financial set out properly. And so we got two very different bids, and it was really difficult to compare them. So in the end, we ended up building our own pro forma and saying, please give it in this way. And the legal evaluation, which was interesting, long and somewhat wearisome, but had to be done. So now we're in preferred bidder stage with RM. This is taking quite a long time, and it's quite hard. The key document though in this was getting Schedule 1 right, which is what we want from RM and what we want them to deliver over the next 5 years. And it's really good. We had a really good discussion with RM building that up. So we just didn't go away in a hole and write it and then give it to them. We worked with them to try and get them to understand what we want and for them to feedback and say, it's not going to work, guys. Let's try something else. And then there were the other schedules, particularly Schedule 5, where it's quite long. Most people understand what they want, but then it's getting the lawyers to get the words right, which can be the long and winding road of it.
What Andrew and I are trying to do is share with you some of the sort of experiences that we've had going through this process, so that if you're going to go through it, you'll have a bit of an inkling of what's to come. So we were at preferred bidder stage back in September, and here we are mid-January. We've had a few weeks kind of delay over Christmas, but this is how long this preferred bidder stage takes. We're pretty close now, aren't we? We were hoping that certainly by the end of this month we'll have the contract at least agreed between RM and Stoke, and it will go off to PFS and doing the council approval loop. And we've already a pre-contract. We don't have a contract yet, but we had to start some of the delivery activities because some schools are opening in September, October time, and if we don't crack on and build the data centre and engage with the schools, we won't hit that timescale. So right now, this was an ICT separate and a builder separate deal, as Andrew explained. So now we're going through all the builder engagement process, which you could do earlier on if you've got a LEP, but it's still the same process. It might be just later on. And some of the key things are making sure you have a very, very clear responsibility matrix, which is a very detailed document which details what we do as ICT providers and what the builders do, and in fact what the authority does. Yeah. And there's an interface agreement as well that says these are your responsibilities, these are our responsibilities, and that is worth spending an awful lot of time on. Because what you don't want is when the schools open is for all of the various providers and the authorities say, well, I thought you were going to do that. And that's a pretty key piece of work. The other thing is all of the school engagement process, because two schools are the same. They've all got their existing legacy equipment, which they bought recently. They've got their specialist equipment. There's a notion of an amount of core IT that we'll give them, but also they can flex it. They have an entitlement, and the way that we've bid it and the authority wanted to do it was have an entitlement, and they could flex it. They could change the specification of what they wanted in their particular school. And we've also got some extra money, which is called the Local Choice Fund, which if a school has got a particular specialism, they can get some software or hardware which is relevant to that school. So it's actually quite a flexible solution in the round. I should mention that in Stoke, in this bid, we partnered with Atomwide, who are a company who specialise really in some of the data centre services. We're building a data centre in Stoke, and Atomwide are delivering email services, caching, filtering, those sorts of services in partnership with us. The sort of base position that we've adopted is a computer pupil ratio of 1 to 2.5. And that's if you like the entitlement of the schools. That's how we've managed to sort of make the funding work. And from that, then schools will build up what exactly they want. You won't know what score is, but as with most authorities, you'll probably already have some of your own developments, web-based developments, that either schools, teachers, parents may be able to get access to web-based services. So there are things that already exist. It isn't a question of an ICT supplier coming in and sweeping everything away and starting again. We've actually got quite a lot of technology which has been developed over the last few years and which we have to integrate. And SCORE is one of those. There are also some other technologies for assessment that Stoke have got that we haven't cracked it yet, but there is a plan to integrate as much of that as we can into the learning platform as we go forward over the next few years. We've also put aside some money for an innovation fund, and Andrew said that the key part of innovation for Stoke was the learning platform, and that's true. But equally, I mean, you can walk around BET and find out there's an awful lot of innovation going on every year, so we can't predict right now at the start of the project the kind of innovative technologies and software and services that we want to apply over the next 5 years. So we put some money aside. And we'll use the CLCs and the LE in Stoke, and that's their kind of test environment, to use that innovation fund to trial some technologies. It might be mobile technologies in schools. And if it works, then we'll roll it out using this bigger innovation fund. So we've put this pot of money aside, which schools will benefit from, but we'll trial some technologies that way. And, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not a single solution. There are schools with Apple networks in. There are schools with thin clients in, and we've got to support them. You know, this is a managed service. It isn't about us saying, here's the one solution. So there is a big training and transformation program going on. We know that teachers are very important in taking teachers forward and getting their acceptance to this learning platform. So there is a big team of people, including Stoke people, who will go out into schools and not just do centralised training, but in school support and mentoring and, you know, how are you using the technology in the classroom? Can we help you? Can we review that? In Stoke, there is no TUPE. Normally, on the supply side, we like to TUPE, yeah, because it means that it's all in our control. And you can pass the risk to us. In this case, Stoke didn't want a TUPE, and there will be some authorities who don't want a TUPE. And that's fine, so you've got to find a way around having a managed service where TUPE doesn't apply, and we've done that. You have to accept there's a different balance of risk and responsibility, so the authority will retain some of the risk, but we work it up together so that it actually works for both parties. And, and our solution works pretty well, we think, but it will work well. It has been, I mean, going through this process, what's been noticeable is that we're kind of working on this together. It isn't a supply side, and an authority trying to, battle it out. Actually, we knuckled down and became one team trying to get to the right solution together. And it has been a true partnership all the way through. And we haven't been throwing things at each other much. So as Andrew was saying, you really could spend a lot of time up front. The more time you spend up front, the more it will pay you back later. The more engagement that you can do with suppliers, whoever they are, before the procurement drawbridge goes up and then you have to, you're very limited, the better. Because what you think you mean, we don't think you mean that. And you only find that out much later. So the more engagement you can do, the better. If you can get into project management methodology, please do. It's generally not something that authorities do. But it, again, will pay you back later if you can apply a project management organisation and getting the timescale sorted out. Stakeholder engagement. It sounds pretty obvious, but again, it's one of those things that you can't do enough of. Communicating to parents, governors, teachers, head teachers, classroom teachers, the whole wider community. So we're going to use a bit of jargon here. Excuse me while my man flus, I need some. If you've not been through the process, you won't know what Schedule 1 or Schedule 5 is. Schedule 1 is the authority's requirements. And as Andrew was saying, getting that very clear in a legal document is hard. You can might be able to write it down in a sort of free format document, but actually putting a contract schedule is hard and it takes time. Yeah, and we need that clear because we've got to interpret it and deliver against that legal document. Schedule 5 is the payment and performance mechanism. And that's the thing that we on the supply side spend a lot of time worrying about, because we don't get it right, we don't get paid. Yeah. So we want to make sure that everything that's around the payment and performance mechanism is clear between both parties and that we can deliver against it. And it includes, soft targets like attainment targets in the authority. We have to sign up to that, to more teachers applying for vacancies, for attendance targets and those sorts of things. And so we're really geared up to supporting the authority and delivering the authorities and the school's objectives. It is very easy to underestimate the resourcing. If you think it's not going to take a lot of time and effort, then you're wrong at every stage. It isn't when you've got to sort of preferred bidder, you can kind of, that's it. There's a lot more work to be done after that, isn't there, Judith? Paddy? And if you are using external advisors, financial advisors, legal advisors, get them under control. They will go off and do other stuff, quite naturally. So book their time well out in advance and make sure that you have them under your control. As I say, project planning is very useful. It takes more time, it's just kind of repetition, really. One of the things that we did that really helped us crack on, I know it might sound like it's a long time between September and now, but we had two or three sessions where we went to the lawyers' offices and we had a lock-in. Everybody that needed to be there was in the room, and we were there sometimes till 2 or 3 o'clock at night and just knocking it all out. And if you don't do that, it's a bit like when you're buying a house and conveyancing. You send your letter to the solicitor and a couple of weeks later they might reply, and then you reply back to them. I mean, it just drags on. actually get everybody in the room, the financial people, the legal people, the technical people, you know, from both sides, and knock it out, write it up together, and it really does not crack on through. Chupi is a big issue. You need to decide very early on in the process whether you're going to chupi or not, because you've got a lot of union engagement and that sort of thing and consultation processes, so that's quite big. It's not a big bang. I mean, in Stoke, we haven't gone for a whack it all in on day one. There's a gradual build-up process of the learning platform as it gets developed. And I know it sounds obvious, but every school is very different. They start from a different place. Their teachers have different levels of e-confidence. The technology is different. You know, the specialisms are different. You have to treat every school differently. And it's very important that you recognise that. So, final slide, and then we'll go on to questions. This is really about making BSF work for the people who need to benefit from it most, really, the learners and the teachers. It is not about a contract between RM and Stoke City Council. We see it much more, I'm hoping both sides, as more than a five-year contract. And it starts to already blossom out beyond the BSF. I mean, Stoke are in regeneration. There's a big long-term regeneration plan, and there are lots of authorities who are doing that kind of thing, and that's what BSF is there to support. And equally, for us, we get the authority inputting into our learning platform development, and that's good news for us. This is not, again, us, you know, implementing something that we think the market wants every time. This is going to be developed over the years with authority input. It's going to change, and it's going to change over time, and we know that. And almost it's changing, it's kind of changing as we go along, and we've got to try and get it to contract, but you just got to roll with it. It will change. It will not be as the contract, but that's okay. And if you've got a good relationship and you can work it out, then it will be fine. And the best thing about this of all, I think, is that we have become pretty much one team. And that's why I think we'll succeed. So, thank you. I think we'll take questions. Do you want to...
You talked about holding funding back for the innovation project.
Yeah.
What's the sort of rules on that? How long can you keep the funding back? Is there any limit on the amount, the percentage of funding from the IT company you can do that with?
Do you want me to take that? I don't think there are any rules. I mean, the big thing is the sort of funding envelope that you've got of £1,450 per pupil on the ICT side and £225 per pupil on the building side. So if you look at the £1,450 per pupil, it depends on the mix of the services that you're going to provide. How much is going to be towards hardware? How much is going to be towards software? How much is going to be towards the managed service? And is there any money left over? And what are you going to do with it? Yeah. You need to build a mechanism around how you're going to use it, how you're going to release it out to the schools, and that needs to be understood contractually. It's not our money, it's your money, it's the school's money. And we need to make sure that that's properly used and they have input into how it's being used, and it needs to be spent. Yeah, but I don't think there are any procurement rules around it. It's just what your priorities are.